I'd like to start this episode by reading an official statement from the legal team set out from Stramash, our multifaceted and multi-headed legal department.
Oh no, not these guys again.
The country of Albania has a long and rich history, a culture that's welcoming to all, a fantastic tourist destination, fantastic food, weather, climate, culture. We in the Albanian government would like to in no way associate ourselves with the Las Vegas Raiders. Nobody in Albania likes the Las Vegas Raiders. We would never go into any form of partnership or encourage any of our nationality to enjoy the Las Vegas Raiders. We fear that the perpetrator on your podcast was not from Albania and may have been from Montrose, which is a horrible, horrible part of the world. Statement ends.
It's going to be a wild ride, so buckle yourselves in.
Hello and welcome to Stramash, the Scottish NFL podcast. We are together. We're international. We've got people in airport lounges waiting to take flights to return back from the USA after an eventful 2024 NFL draft. Joining me to pick apart some of the headlines and hot takes, we've got Ian Stephen, we've got Gordon McGuinness, and we've got Paul Mitchell. Paul, first of all, have you watched the draft yet?
I've got to the end of round one. How good is that? I've really enjoyed it.
Did anything trigger you during the draft, Paul?
The only thing, and it's brilliant that Ian's doing it today, is wearing sunglasses indoors. I mean, it's such a ball bag move. I mean, it's unbelievably bad. At least a couple of draft picks decided to take them off before they went on stage. But yeah, it seems like somebody had the idea to wear sunglasses indoor and everybody else copied it.
Unless it's like a record draft class for everybody having glaucoma.
Yeah, I don't want my quarterback wearing sunglasses walking out, thank you.
Is that something they check for at the combine? Is that what is glaucoma on the list? I've never seen it. Okay, we're getting together then on the back of what was a significant, historic 2024 draft for a number of reasons. The sheer volume of quarterbacks taken early on. Let's start there, first of all. No real surprises through the first three picks, I don't think. Perhaps some surprise. A little bit of surprise, maybe J.J. McCarthy, but maybe not. There was a lot of people chatting about it. Probably more of a surprise about where Penix and Bo Nix went. Maybe not, given the fact that the Broncos
No surprises at all. If you listen to our podcast, we told you that Bo Nix and Michael Penix would be going early, and we even told you the teams they would be going to. No surprises. Yes, we did.
Did we say that Penix was going to the Falcons?
When you went here to talk your pish, Jamie and I did talk about the fact that Bo Nix was the ideal candidate to go to the Broncos because he was so similar in style to Drew Brees. And we talked about the fact that Atlanta picking up a quarterback was a sensible move to learn behind Cousins for a couple of years.
And do we think that Penix sits for a couple of years?
Yes.
Given his age?
Yes.
He definitely will, because Cousins, they can't get out of the Kirk Cousins contract for 2 years. So that's how it's going to go. I don't hate it because it's too important a position, and it's a position they haven't got right since early in Matt Ryan's career. So, you know, they're obviously making a huge effort to be set at the position, both short and long term. The only thing I don't like is Raheem Morris, after the fact, came out and said that they were kind of following the Packers model with Jordan Love. There's a huge age difference between Jordan Love and Michael Penix. So, but that being said, we talked about it a lot in the office after the draft, and Steve Palazzolo, who's one of the guys we had in our draft show, he said to me, like, if you think about it, if they get it right, if Penix is the guy, then it doesn't really matter that he's going to be 27 by the time he takes 3 inches as a starting quarterback. If you get 5-6 years of him, then...
I have a slight issue, Gordon. Is Steve Pazzola the guy with the haircut that makes him look like he wants to be in NWA in 1984 with Jerry Curl?
He looks like Ron Jeremy, yes.
Yeah, it was the worst haircut I have ever seen in my life. And I'm saying that as a bald man.
Sid Vicious as a brunette.
I'm jealous of people who have full manes of hair, and his is a monstrosity and an atrocity.
He's also a fascinating guy because he's like 6'10" as well. He's an absolute giant.
It's even worse.
He was a minor league baseball pitcher.
Can't you take him aside as your boss and say, "Listen, you're on camera, mate. What is it? It is literally like an unshorn sheep that's been out in the rain."
I don't think HR would look on me kindly if I did that.
Do HR look on you kindly at the moment?
Probably not. Surely, as the person in contact with our legal department here at the Stramash podcast, you're aware of things like that.
That's why I'm saying it, because I'm not employed by PFF. So,
right.
Can I take an issue? It's not with what Gordon said. It's with the argument. I love that the Atlanta Falcons think they're following the Packers model. The only one problem is the Packers have been successful. Atlanta haven't. I think this is a luxury pick. If I'm Kirk Cousins, who's just signed there, I'm pretty pissed off. I'd be looking for either help on my line or looking for a better receiver. I think it's an awful pick from that point of view for the short term. What it tells me, I mean, if I'm Kirk Cousins and if I knew they were going to do that, I wouldn't have signed for them. I think it shows a complete and utter lack of ambition to win in the next 2 years in a division that I think is very winnable because there ain't a good team in it.
Here's a question for you, Paul. What happened to Kirk Cousins during the season last year?
I would answer that, but genuinely, my doorbell's just rung, so I'm going to have to go and answer it.
While he's been saved by the bell.
I hope it's somebody from the podcast appearing to complain in person.
It's Steve. Steve's just shown up. He picked one. He quickly searched for the addresses of the people on the podcast. He got Paul's. He's gone to fight.
The other guy was quite handsome.
Paul's address is the only public one we've ever put out there. So if there is any abuse, it is landing at his doorstep. I know what you're making, and it is a valid point. Kirk Cousins was injured for a large part of last season. So I guess if you're the Falcons, you pick up someone with a view that actually, if Cousins does go down injured, we want someone who can maybe step in and be capable to keep a team's momentum going. And I think that it's still hard because it was such an early pick. And I think that's the bit for me. It's such an early pick. It's not like that team doesn't have some significant gaps, predominantly on the defense side of things. That offensive line could do with a little bit of
significant gaps is the correct term, because between the last quarterback going in the first round until Spencer Rattler, that was the record for the biggest gap in between quarterback picks. So teams like Atlanta and Denver realized at that point there's such a drop off in talent, we need to go now. But when Jalen Hurts was picked by the Eagles in the second round, people come out and said it's a ridiculous pick, it's a luxury pick, it's an absolute waste. Those people look like complete and utter morons now because the Eagles drafted their franchise quarterback. There is no more important position in sports than that quarterback. The Falcons haven't had a good one since Matt Ryan, and I don't even think they had a good one before Matt Ryan. So they've now doubled down. They've got twice the opportunity. Look at somebody like the Oakland Raiders. Who's their quarterback? McConnell?
They are the team that came out of this. Weirdly, I quite like their draft, but they came out of it the worst at the quarterback position, because they go into the season with Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. But like they at 13, they were surely expecting to get a shot at one of the quarterbacks. So for them to not have any hope at all. The other thing for me that was interesting was, so the first six picks I thought were pretty much as expected. The fact that McCarthy didn't, there wasn't a trade up, didn't really surprise me, because it felt like one of the four quarterbacks, there wasn't really going to be an arms race to go up and get them. But where it got fascinating for me was after the Chargers took Joe Alt instead of one of the wide receivers, Tennessee, I'm assuming, probably tried to trade down a little bit.
I think Tennessee cried a little bit.
Probably. They were the team that had the worst luck in the top 10, because they Joe Alt was mocked to them probably 80-90% of mock drafts. And also, I really agree with the way the Chargers did it, because the process was smart with all the wide receivers that are available in this draft. They got the best tackle, and then they get the wide receiver at the top of the second round. So
I'm going to say something controversial, and some people won't like this, but it is fact in my mind. Nobody at this point, nobody has had a bad draft. When mini camps start next week and the teams actually see the players that turn up, that's the point where you have a bad draft, when you realize, oh, what have we done? This guy's a complete and utter lump. Or, oh my goodness me, he's far better than we ever expected. He's an undrafted free agent. That's the point where they know if they've had a good draft or not. There's still that slight kind of leeway, that little bit of room, that margin that says you haven't completely messed up your offseason and your franchise's future for the next 5 years, but it's only going to last a couple more days. So fans of teams who traditionally draft badly, enjoy it now, because in a couple of days' time, you're going to get some really kind of strangled tweets coming out from the beat writers at whatever team it is that follows, where they say, I'm not sure this guy's ready for the NFL.
I think you can have good and bad process, though. So I think that's what, like, all the discussion around whether or not draft grades are worth anything or not, and, you know, they're not worth putting the most stock in the world, but everyone cares how people think their team drafted immediately after the fact. But I think you can look at, like, the process of how you got there, and, you know, like, the Broncos are fascinating because they took a quarterback that many thought you could get at the end of the first round with, like, a trade-up or something like that, but they just weren't willing to risk it. And I think that makes perfect sense at the quarterback position. So I think you can look and you can say, well, I don't really like the way they drafted in terms of how guys were viewed on, like, the consensus big board and stuff like that, rather than individual kind of draft rankings.
I think, Gordon, it's more a case of being able to say a franchise is being conservative or a franchise is being incredibly aggressive with the way they've drafted, because historically some picks have got a better chance of working out per position than others. So, for example, the people are saying the Eagles have had a really good draft by getting Quinion Mitchell and then Cooper DeJean, but historically it's really difficult to pick up secondary pieces in the first round of the draft. So in a couple of years' time, the Eagles might totally flame out, but there's near enough a 100% guarantee that Joe Holt is going to be an NFL football player for 10 years. So you could say, by being conservative with that pick, because they could have went from Leak Neighbours, they went for Joe Holt, and they've been sensible. That's maybe a better way to break up and analyse.
Yeah.
I liked from the draft podcast that you guys did, the hopes of our Raiders friend, who said that the aim of the Raiders is to draft someone in the first round that isn't going to be cut or arrested, which I have to think is not really a high bar for many teams, you know, but I suppose that's the Raiders for you. My concern, I like all these draft grades because nobody's doing it out of nastiness. You're doing it from what you see and the body of work that somebody's put up. I think the best campaign this year has been those around Caleb Williams. Highly average for USC last year. They were 6-0. They finished 8-5. He showed very little leadership. He doesn't look particularly great on the eye compared to some of the other quarterbacks. I'm stunned he went at one. I just don't think he's a particularly great player. He's not a nailed on number one pick. But then again, you look back at some of the number one or the top five picks, Darnold, Rosen, Lance, all these guys were also overhyped. And I think this comes to Ian's point. Until they go into camp, you don't really know what you've got. I mean, Brock Purdy, you know, Mr. Irrelevant, has been in a Super Bowl. Nobody had him high in the draft boards. Nobody talked about him going in round one. It is a bit of a crapshoot to a certain extent. You've got to do your due diligence. You've got to do your process. But at the end of the day, you don't know. I mean, if you had to put money on it, 50-50, I'll say that Williams will be a bust. I don't think he's going to be the answer to Chicago. But that's just from what I've seen. Other people think he's going to be good. You know, I've gone around, because I didn't see much of the draft. I've gone around, I've looked around at various reviews. Some people say, yeah, it's a good pick. Some people say it comes with risk. There isn't a consensus. And there won't be till we see him in a uniform actually playing will we get a better idea.
There's no risk at all.
No, I think Paul's point has relevancy, Gordon, and I'll tell you why. Because the draft process is now so trained into any prospect coming into the NFL. They know exactly what to say. They know what to do. Their friends have been coached to say, like, their teammates have been coached to say the right things to the team. The team don't know until that player comes into the franchise whether Caleb Williams is absolutely in love with football and will come in at 5 a.m. and it'll be his playbook. Nobody knows any of that. Nobody knows if he's just coming in, he's going to take his signing bonus and then he's going to mail it in like Jamarcus Russell style, although Jamarcus Russell was a massive outlier. The chances are you're probably looking at about 75% he's going to be an incredibly successful NFL player, but that is that just that little bit that the teams will never know until they get this guy in the actual training facility and find out what they are in a pressure situation when the NFL is involved.
No, like, you don't know how it's going to work out. Two things I would say is why I don't think there's risk involved, and that's in a relative sense, but there's not really a ton of risk because of the rookie wage scale. So you're tied to that quarterback for a few years. You know, the coaches and front office, if it doesn't work out, they probably lose their jobs because that's what happens in that situation. But for the Bears long term, if it doesn't work out in a few years' time, you're in position to draft another quarterback. What will be the deciding factor, though, on where I think that he has a greater than 50% chance of working out for them is that situation matters a lot. So you look back at the Mahomes draft. Mahomes is the best quarterback to come out of that draft. I don't think we can say with certainty that if he goes to Cleveland number one overall, as dysfunctional as they were at the time, that he works out in the NFL, because you would have had to start from day one. And then all the because similar as a prospect, Caleb Williams coming out in the draft, there was a lot of good, but also like a lot of like bad in terms of throwing interceptions and kind of being a little bit too reckless and all that stuff. Where I think the Bears are in a really strong position here is that this is not a team who were the number one overall pick on merit. They were just inside the top 10 on merit. It was the Panthers pick that they got. And if you look at what they have at receiver, the offensive line, all those things, they are just in a stronger position than Carolina were last year, for example. So I think that's what I say there's a greater than 50% chance on it working out for them.
And this is why it's fascinating, right? We talk about grades. Grades are indicative of what we've seen.
Ooh, indicative. Somebody swallowed a thesaurus. Well done, Cameron.
But even then,
knowing that it's Cameron, will be pooing the thesaurus back out later.
Bringing it back to anything in our football, right? So Scottish football, you can get players that are phenomenal at youth team level. If you're under 18s, striker that's banging in goals, takes a step up, can't cut the mustard. And then there's some guy that's never really been a prolific at all, but as he's grown and he's continued to put the work in, he's got better. Let's take Lawrence Shankland as a perfect example right now. As a youth player, Aberdeen let him go because his attitude was a bit stinky, but something that he admits himself now. It took him actually not being very good in the younger part of his career for him to kind of wind his neck in, grow from that, and be a better player on the back of it. You've no idea what player is going to come out of it. What you can do is you can look at the factors. If we go back to Caleb Williams, I understand the questions around, you know, could he be a bust? And I think the fact, for me, the biggest factor there is the fact he's gone from California to Illinois, and he's going to be playing in a wet, cold Soldier Field versus lovely, sunny, whatever stadium it is, and I forget, the Coliseum?
Yeah, USC play at the Coliseum, don't
yes,
they?
Yes, Coliseum. But if you look at their games last year, right, they didn't have a great record, but I'm not sure that Williams was to blame for that. You look at the points scored, and they're phenomenal. Even in the games that they lost, the least amount of points was 20 against Notre Dame. That, you know, they were in good form. He's proven the year before, obviously, the Heisman winner the year before that. He's clearly a talented player. There's been question marks about some of the things that have come out, that have been said, his dad's comments and things like that. Fine. At the end of the day, none of it actually matters if he goes out and performs on the field.
I think what I need to do here is akin to putting polish on Cameron's nipples, and that it'll enhance a good point. Those two things that came out of the draft that have not really been spoken about before, which I find incredibly interesting. One was that teams were looking to see if players didn't transfer to another program, that they stayed loyal to the program that they had originally joined. So they were using that as a marker to determine what kind of player they're going to be getting into the franchise. So that was one of the things that the Eagles used as a positive for Quinion Mitchell. The other thing is the way that some teams were manipulating the draft board for next season, because this is when NIL kicks in. And there's a lot of players who have decided not to come out of college because they might be money in NIL. So there's less undergraduate players coming out, which means there might be more talent next year. So it's two things that are kind of new that teams are going to factor. They're going to look at what level of loyalty a player has to a franchise and how much matters to a player rather than how much playing football matters to a player. And it's two kind of concepts that haven't really been introduced before, but just because of the way that college kind of redetermined itself over the last few years.
I also like Gordon's point. It's an interesting one. You know, what damage could Caleb Williams do if they get it wrong? You know, he's on a rookie deal. It's 2 to 3 years, 4 years, perhaps they get rid of him. But they've just gone through that. And at what point do you seriously piss off your fan base? Or are we just at the point where everybody accepts a team like the Bears will pretty much sell out their season tickets, sell out their merchandise? Does it really matter if you get it wrong? Because there's no extreme consequences for the franchise overall. There is for perhaps the GM who drafts them. But, you know, you're not talking empty stadiums. You're not talking a drop-off in revenue. So, you know, that's just an alternative point that you talk about risk. Risk is only to a small number of individuals. Fans will get pissed off, but where are they going to go?
Fans will be fine, though, because like the draft is also a dopamine hit of like faith, I guess. This is a franchise that they didn't lose faith when Trubisky didn't work out. And they didn't lose faith when Justin Fields didn't work out. If Caleb Williams doesn't work out, then 3-4 years from now, they'll be drafting another quarterback and the fan base will go, oh, maybe this is the guy that's going to work out for us.
They're also protected a little bit by consensus here as well. Trubisky was seen maybe as a bit more of a reach, those question marks. Whilst there's question marks about Williams, there's not the same level. Like their general, I felt the general consensus was he was number one. There was maybe some other chat about other guys could potentially be better, so should they go number one? And I think that argument remains true, right? Other guys could be better. CJ Stroud is probably better than Bryce Young is going to be. But
Gordon, we're just checking. You okay? You okay? I know somebody's asking. I think we should all ask if Gordon's okay.
Did someone tell you to shut up?
No, it was someone to collect the plate.
All right, okay.
Collecting the plate.
Yes.
The one time I didn't mute myself and I wasn't talking as well.
So if anybody doesn't know, Gordon's currently serving 24 hours in custody. He's cut his sober up before questioning. They've just taken away his complimentary meal from the Ohio custody. And they're very generous allowing him on the phone as long to speak to as well in county prison. But there you go.
It's because I had to accept the charges. So,
my one phone call was to talk to you guys about the NFL draft.
There's a very angry man standing behind him wanting to speak to his bail bondsman.
Okay, like, let's move on beyond the Caleb Williams conversation, though, then. Like, let's look at Jaden Daniels and Drake May. The Commanders, obviously, in another similar situation here, right, where they get this year's Heisman winner, a career that's grown through college. The momentum is certainly behind Jaden Daniels in that sense. Some question marks there, though, as well. You know, the Commanders, is that a good landing spot for him? Is he set up for initial success here? Or do we worry about his landing spot? Same question for Drake May. Is the Patriots a good landing spot for him? Do we think he'll start, probably less likely to, versus Daniels, right? So who's got the better landing spot for the player that they are and the bits that they've got?
I think they both landed in solid spots for different reasons. So I think Daniels is probably a better fit for the offense in Washington because it's like Cliff Kingsbury kind of spread offense, likely going to be what they utilize. So being able to spread the defense out and then him being able to do damage as a runner as well. Although a lot of people compare him to Lamar Jackson in the sense that he can run and he can throw. He's very different as a runner compared to Lamar Jackson in the sense that Lamar is actually quite good at avoiding contact, whereas Jaden Daniels seeks out. And if he continues, so he's a lot more like Robert Griffin, where RG3 did not protect himself well enough. And there is a realistic chance that he could wind up, you know, having a shorter career because he gets too hurt because he invites contact the way he runs. And then Drake May, I thought, was a horrible landing spot because he goes to New England and there's no weapons there. Then the Patriots actually had quite a nice draft where they drafted a pair of pretty decent receivers. So they've actually taken steps to improve that and move it forward. So I think Daniel's probably in a better spot. But Drake May, at least the Patriots appear to be trying to fix the issues that a quarterback would find there.
Yeah, I think if you were to ask which team would win their divisional title first, Washington or New England, I think you would probably say Washington have a better shot because the Giants still aren't great. The Cowboys, nobody knows. The Eagles should be good, but you're then up against, in the, you know, they're on Buffalo, who are strong. Miami can be strong. I think he couldn't help. That's the way they were going to go, but I would much rather be the former LSU quarterback than Drake May.
Beyond the quarterback situation then, which we've covered, I suppose, actually, let's touch on the last two. We've talked about... we've not really talked about Bo Nix, and we haven't talked about J.J. McCarthy. So J.J. McCarthy to the Vikings, first of all. We'll get to see. So it's interesting for us in the UK as well. We're going to get to see Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze playing at Spurs, which with Keenan Allen, Swift in there as well, that's an exciting Bears offense, which is great. From the Vikings' point of view, we get to see J.J. McCarthy, Justin Jefferson, and who the hell have they got running back at the moment? I couldn't even tell you. But the Vikings are also semi-interesting. What do we think J.J. McCarthy is going to be, though? Do we think that that's the right quarterback fit with a wide receiver like Justin Jefferson?
It's fine. They didn't have to pay to trade up to get him. So, you know, they paid like a small amount. It was like a little bit of a pick swap or whatever they gave up.
And yeah, I don't think it was a surprise, Cameron. I mean, that was the best player available to them at that position, so they've gone for it. So I've no issue with that. And I think, you know, they made it well known that they were going to go down that route. What I like about these two players is they've played a lot, you know, so they've got a big body of work for you to look at. There's a lot of tape for the coaches to look at, to identify what the problems are, is to start addressing them pretty quickly. I like Bo Nix. I mean, 60 plus games he's played. He's played a lot of football. And I think Gordon said it earlier, I don't think Denver had too much choice. I don't think they could have waited for him to go down the board a little bit more. I'm not sure he would have been there. So it's a little bit high, but I think they had no choice. It's a better pick than the Falcons have made. I still think that was way too early for him. I think Bo Nix has got a chance. He's got a coach who likes that style of quarterback, and we'll see where it goes. The thing about McCarthy is there's good people around him, so he may well succeed. But he's, again, another player that you have to see. You just got to wait and see. And again, I come back to Darnold, Rosen, Lance, you know, Baker Mayfield, all these guys. It depends on the situation they go into. He's got a bit he can throw to, so he might not be too bad.
Here's a good question for you. What coach in the NFL knows J.J. McCarthy more than anyone else?
Jim Harbaugh.
Jim Harbaugh, who had the fifth pick in the NFL draft. Mm. His current quarterback is Justin Herbert. Mm. So it's pretty clear that with no moves made by Harbaugh at pick number five, that he views Herbert as a better quarterback than J.J. McCarthy. If he thinks J.J. McCarthy had the potential to be one of the best players in NFL history or whatever, they would have manipulated a way to move Herbert on and draft J.J. McCarthy. I think that's undoubted. It was convoluted for me to say so, but I think it definitely would have taken place. I don't think Harbaugh's been banging the table to say we must have McCarthy in at this franchise. I think he's quite happy to go with Herbert.
So where I'd say it's a little bit not as clear cut there is, there are salary cap implications with Herbert's deal. And I don't think it would have been sensible for them to have made that move. While we're on this, there is breaking news that the Cowboys have fixed the running back situation by bringing back the ghost of Zeke Elliott at this stage in his career. So after not drafting a running back, at least I don't think they drafted a running back.
Cameron, if you can get this out in the next 10 minutes, edited and out, we might have the breaking news.
There you go.
There's more than 10 minutes of content I'm going to have to remove, mostly down to my crappy internet. But yes, so they've addressed that situation there. It is interesting. I still think Herbert's class as well. I'm excited to see what he can do actually under a good head coach. Although there's a bit of a rebuild there with so many pieces given away. Other bits, one thing that we'll talk about, because I want your opinion, Paul, on this one, was Sean Payton claiming that he was, and did it rather smugly, that he was delighted that he managed to bluff out the Vikings into trading up with the Jets. What do we believe him? What's that all about?
Just after a soundbite, wasn't he? Tried to noise somebody up. I don't think there was much in it, to be honest.
Was that just an old bygone of the Minnesota Miracle? Is that like an old wound that he's just desperately still trying to redress? That's the only thing I can think of. Like, because the Jets are in his conference. The Vikings aren't.
They didn't give the Jets like a huge amount of draft capital. Like, there's not. No, I think if there's any old wounds, it's not the Minnesota Miracle. It's probably for Bounty Gate, because that was the Vikings that were the kind of main team in that for the Brett Favre stuff.
Ah, I forgot about that. Very fine. So this is just bitterness on his part, is what we're going with.
I mean, Bounty Gate. I mean, you call it Bounty Gate. We just called it football. You know, if that's the way you want to go about it.
Any other significant picks there? Anything that was massively surprising? Amarius Mims got an awful lot of conversation beforehand. Very raw, very unproven. But the Bengals, disappointed to see him in your division, Gordon?
Not really. No, I think, like, they were obviously going to go trenches. So it was either going to be someone like Mims or one of the other tackles, or it was going to be Byron Murphy, Johnny Newton, someone like that. So it was kind of as expected. I think the offensive line in general is not surprising, because it's all the guys that we thought would go in round one with round one. But teams massively invested in the offensive line in this draft. Like almost like a little bit of a reset, because I think the overall level of offensive line play in the NFL has been down for a while. There's a little bit of an offensive line reset in this draft. The Steelers in particular, the Steelers very well could have drafted into a top five offensive line in the next couple of years. Much as it pains me to say, I think they had a tremendous draft.
I was going to say, that's normally your safe words, isn't it? The team I feel sorry for is the Raiders. They were obviously looking for something other than Brock Bowers. It's like, you know, winning bullseye and finding out you won the speedboat. You know, it's just not great in any way, shape, or form. He's a great player, but what are they actually going to do with him? I don't know. Of all the draft rooms I would have liked to have been in, I would have liked to have been in that one just to see the reaction. Certainly when the Falcons pulled what they did, and then, you know, the scrambling about to see. I mean, I think they've gone best player available that they think is there, but I just don't know what they're going to do with them, given everything else and all the other problems around them.
It's interesting. Are they tooling up for something next season? Because they brought in Jackson Powers as well at centre, so they've got two incredibly good tight ends at Myers and Bowers, and they've got an anchor at centre. So that's setting up for a rookie quarterback to come in next season. Teams don't deliberately tank, but over under Raiders getting 8 wins this season, you definitely got to go under, don't you? So maybe they're accepting they're not going to be a competitive franchise this season.
But the problem with that is it affects the coaching staff. I mean, Gordon's point earlier about, you know, you can miss a draft pick and it doesn't really affect the overall fan base, et cetera, et cetera. But it does affect your coaching prospects and things like that.
He screams transitional coach, though, doesn't he, Paul?
He does, but it's again, are we getting to the point where football fans are more accepting of, you know, we're not going to have a great draft, or we're drafting for the future? You know, what have you got to look forward to in terms of the season ahead? You know, we live in a culture that's more and more about instant success, you know, and you're wanting to be entertained. I'm just wondering if some fan bases will start to get a little bit more pissed off than others and start to show that by not going to games. I mean, it's expensive to do so, you know, and just sitting watching their team on TV rather than spending all the money going to see them.
But they're in a tourist town though, so maybe they can afford to do that, Paul. Maybe their rationale is the empty seats will get picked up by somebody just coming in for the weekend.
Yeah, I mean that's possible.
I think the other thing to consider for their situation is they now get the opportunity to have another season to see if Aidan O'Connell has anything. He was all right last year. He might be good enough that if you have a good situation around him, good receivers and stuff like that, that he can be somewhat effective. And you know, you can potentially push for a wild card. And they'll find that out this year. And if they don't find that out this year, then they will be in position for a quarterback next year. Where I think the interesting discussion on quarterback is for next year, it's not at this point, it's not viewed as a strong quarterback class. And if you go back historically, almost every single season, once we get through the draft, the conversation is, oh, it's a good quarterback class next year. So it's not. I think that's probably why teams were a bit more aggressive this year in going and going up and getting quarterbacks or taking quarterbacks earlier. But that's six teams right away that the Raiders know will be in the market for a quarterback next year. And then there's probably another 10 teams that are happy with a quarterback situation, and then others that are, you know, okay with their situation. So they just might, if they wind up picking eighth in the draft next year, they honestly might not have much, if any, competition for quarterback.
Can we talk about the NFL, oh my God, what have you done moment? It's kind of glaring, it's sticking out. It's pick number 28, the NFL allowing Xavier Worthy to go to the Kansas City Chiefs. You're just, oh no, come on, guys. Somebody should have taken him beforehand. Patrick Mahomes must have been absolutely salivating in his luxury mansion whilst on Instagram with his annoying wife. He must have been over the moon to have a target like that that's just going to drop in. I'm not saying he's necessarily going to be any good at catching the ball, but he's definitely going to move the secondary back an extra 10 yards just worrying about his speed.
I also really liked that. So they had two trade-ups early in the draft, in the first and second round, with the Bills and the 49ers. And both of them were really good process because they didn't give up additional picks. It was pick swaps. So they moved back in other routes, but they didn't lose overall draft picks, which is, if you're going to try and trade up, it's a really smart way to do it because you still, if you think about giving up draft capital, and you draft less players, you increase your risk that you have no one from that draft class that hits. In the way they did their moves up for Xavier Worthy and Kingsley Suamataya, you still get the benefit of the other players that you draft, and they potentially hit.
Yeah. If you're throwing darts at a bunch of 7 out of 10 players, you still want to have some darts in your hand at the end of the day, because that's better than zero.
Rush Podcast does not advocate people throwing darts at anyone. Please do not do this at home.
I don't know. Depends on who the person is.
That's another training course that Cameron will have to go on. Jeez.
So we'll talk about cornerbacks because both of you guys got one, Ian and Gordon. Let's start, Ian. You talked about the fact, you know, two very good players. When Cooper Dijon, apparently as he's to be known, Gordon, as he continued
apparently to... Apparently so, like the mustard.
I hoped that the Niners would pick him up in the first round because of I've banged on enough about needing a cornerback. We got one in the second round. People have seen it as a reach, whatever. I'm kind of like, fine, this position that he's done. There was a lot of question marks about him not being a big playmaker, but he's very good at breaking up passes. That's fine for me. That's all we need, someone to break up passes against someone like DK Metcalf in the division. Let's worry less about making plays and just break up the pass. If they can't convert, that's fine. You don't always need to make it a turnover. But let's start, first of all, you guys. Quinion Mitchell, Ian, were you happy when he was announced?
Stunned, astonished, amazed, bruised. I thought he was potentially top 10 player, and I thought there was not a hope in hell the Eagles were ever going to get him. And the fact that he dropped all the way down was a combination of the excitement for quarterbacks and the fact that he's coming from a small school, so there's a bit of kind of wariness about small school cornerbacks. I think the Eagles are delighted to have him. And I thought, right, that's it. That's the Eagles done with their secondary. They'll move on. And the fact that Cooper Dijon was still sitting there and the Eagles could trade their two second-round picks and trade up to take him, it was pretty amazing as well, because he looks like he's going to be the modern secondary kind of Swiss Army knife player that you get in the NFL and quite a lot of defenses. So I think the Eagles come away incredibly happy from that. But the caveat is it's maybe the hardest position to predict in football. So it's no by no means guaranteed that those two players will stick in the roster in 4 years' time. I hope they do.
That's why I love that they got two of them, though. Mm-hmm. This is the Ravens did it as well, and the Ravens have done this in 5 out of the last 6 drafts. They've used 2 picks in the top 4 rounds in the same position. This year it was the cornerback as well. It was Nate Wiggins and TJ Tampa. And I'll go back to the point about good process. It was Ted Knutson, I think is how you pronounce it, at StatsBomb quote tweeted me saying about the Ravens process in this. And it's basically what it's acknowledging is we understand we have a need, but we also understand that our ability to address that need in the draft is not, like our evaluation of the players is not perfect process. So what you're saying is we, Eagles are saying we need to address our secondary, we need to improve. And you've gone and taken 2 players in the top 2 rounds. Your chance on one of those guys hitting is so much greater than the chance on if you only take one.
It's actually
really, really good process.
It's actually 3 guys, Gordon, because Isaiah Rodgers got reinstated from his ban and people thought he wouldn't. The Eagles picked him up, the Colts cut him last year. The Eagles took a chance that he would get reinstated. Everybody thought, no, he's not going to get reinstated. Just before the draft, he gets reinstated. So it's 3 new pieces to the secondary that wasn't expected at all before the draft. So did you hear the reaction when the Eagles drafted in the 3rd round? They picked up what's his name? It's a
Jalen.
Yeah. And I don't think he realized he was speaking. I don't think he realized he was speaking to Howie Roseman when how phone hit, hi, how you doing? And he went, what's up, big money? Like everybody's just like filming it, and Howie's just like, I thought that was pretty good. I like it. I like it when you see players that are incredibly excited to get drafted. But one thing I did notice, and I don't want, this is very cruel and judgmental, and it's probably wrong to say it, but there was times when they flipped into the draft prospect's house when they were getting drafted, and there was a couple of times you thought, that guy is a stick-on to make it in the NFL, and there's a couple of times thinking, oh, he's going to be out of the league after a year and be bankrupt.
Next time we're together, we need to go into what defined that for you. Like, what you need to draft this up next year so we know what to look out for. I'm not sure exactly what gave that indication.
Well, Joe Alt looking like he was dressing to go to Sunday school in a log cabin with a family of behemoths around him. Like, yeah, he's just born and bred to play in the NFL.
Right. There's a guy surrounded by, like, yeah, nonsense and Bob Agnew. Fine. What about Nate Wiggins then?
Good player. Could have gone a little bit higher, I think. The concern I have with him is just that he's very, very slight. He's very thin.
That's what you said about me, and I turned out fine, Gordon.
Well, then let's hope we get the same results with Nate Wiggins.
You really don't want me playing cornerback for the Ravens, no. Gordon.
But yeah, he's really fast. I think he has the chance to be really good. And it was an underrated need. I think everyone went into that draft thinking the Ravens have to take offensive line in the first round, or they have to go wide receiver. And then with the way the offensive linemen came off the board, it would have been a reach. They could have gone and taken one of the guys. I think, in fact, did the Ravens draft the first offensive lineman of the 2nd round? They might have done. Patrick Paul went before. So I think they made the right decision to go cornerback in the 1st round. I think it's fine. The other, getting away from our team slightly. I think we should probably touch on the Bills a little bit. I really liked what they did in moving down, picking up some more, like getting some more draft capital and doing so, and then still coming away with Keon Coleman at the top of the 2nd round. I didn't love the rest of their draft apart from, I didn't love their day 2, but I did quite like their day 3 when they went and got Cedric Van Pran, who might start for them at center. on day one, and then they got another couple of players like the linebacker from Washington and the edge defender, Javon Solomon. So nice draft by the Bills to retool a little bit.
Do you know who I really liked? And it's a team that we never really talk about, but I think the Arizona Cardinals had an absolutely stunning draft. Marvin Harrison, who's a stick-on 10-year All-Pro with a very weird relationship with his dad, it must be said. Did you see him going up to his dad just after we drafted? And his dad was like, well done. And he's like, and then walked past. Like, is that his dad? I was like, it was literally, is that not his dad? That's his, did not kind of hug her, right? Well, okay, that was weird. Darius Robinson at the end of the first round, who I think is going to be phenomenal. Max Melton, Trey Benson, who's going to be a great running back. Tip Raymond, who's like an off-the-charts athletic specimen at tight end. Dadrian Taylor-Demarison, going to be a good safety. Xavier Jones, Christian Jones, a project at tackle. I think they've had a really, really stunning draft. This might be the start of a turnaround in Phoenix. Are they still in Phoenix? Yeah. Tempe, Phoenix, somewhere around.
They're in Phoenix. I think
are they not technically Glendale?
They're still in Arizona, unlike their ice hockey team, which has moved. So at least they've kept them.
Glendale is basically a part of Phoenix, right? Though, like Glendale is a more specific. I suppose it probably isn't like the way it works. It's all one big city.
That's probably the equivalent of saying that Motherwell's in Glasgow.
Yeah, fine, okay.
We'll save that for the geography podcast, guys. Let's move on. Thank you.
Speaking of that, our geography podcast is out next week. We'll tune in when Paul tells us his thoughts on the capital city of Zaire. Well, Cameron tells you how to exchange money in euros to rupees.
I should touch on the Niners pick, I guess. Ricky Pearsall, a wide receiver, wasn't necessarily the name that I thought was going to come out. I think the fine, good pickup. It's a needs yards. His big thing seems to be yards after catch, which is the big thing about the Niners. Let's be perfectly honest. For me, the most reassuring part of this was seeing CJ Stroud's reaction to him being picked up and the fact that Stroud was desperate for him. He was the guy he wanted. I have to say, with each passing interaction I see from CJ Stroud, I like him more and more.
It's great,
like, he's so engaging. And the whole bit with him and the Cowboys,
Micah Parsons,
was brilliant. A brilliant conversation between the two of them. A proper detailed argument from players that play the game, arguing over each other about why one play would work against the next. Really, really good content. Massive fan. I've got a real soft spot for the Texans at the moment. I think that they're an exciting team. I really hope they come over to the UK this year. There is a chance. I think they could play the Vikings. I'm sure the Texans are one of the road teams there. I would love to see that. Vikings versus Texans would be a tremendous game to see. So anyway, right.
We do have one important issue of business we need to address, Cameron.
Okay.
Praise be for we have another Scotsman that's joined the NFL fraternity.
We do.
I think that's brilliant. And Hamza Youssef is about to have a press conference as we record at 12 o'clock, specifically to welcome him to the NFL. I think it's a nice move by the First Minister. I think it's a nice touch and will raise the profile of the sport. So good on him for doing that.
Imagine Paul taking a good story about a Scottish player getting a chance in the NFL and using it to make a Facebook dad politics joke. Who's surprised?
I actually have reached out to our official NFL Scotland ambassador, and he has already reached out to praise to welcome him to the Eagles fraternity. So we don't have to worry about that. Scotland has got him covered. And I think everybody's going to follow quite closely the mini camps to see how he's getting on. Intriguing prospect, definitely. And I definitely hope he catches on somewhere.
Very excited to see. And I would like to think it as a minimum, a practice squad member for the Eagles. And as long as he is at least that, then an opportunity will potentially continue to arise. I think it's a really exciting story and one that we'll continue to follow we were delighted that Bez was sitting down with Jamie to have a conversation. We'll do what we can to check in with him again. We are trying and we'll continue to try to speak to all of the Scottish players in the NFL. We've got four as it stands, which is unreal. And if we sit and think about this, because I know there's been a lot of talk about other nations getting players and they're rightly excited about it. 20 plus consecutive years, there has been a Scottish active NFL player on a roster. That's impressive by any stretch. And I think that it's something that we're absolutely delighted that Praise can continue that trend. Obviously, the player pathway now is more robust. Hopefully, this is the start of seeing more and more players. But even without the pathway there, you know, David Ojabo didn't need the pathway. Jamie Gillen didn't need the pathway. Graham Gano and Lawrence Tyne's situation slightly different. Obviously, grew up very young in Scotland and moved back to America, but still Scotsmen themselves. So it's brilliant. It's brilliant for the growth of the game. And I think that kids having players to look at here that are, you know, representing Scotland with the salt arrow on the back of their helmet when that time comes around, I think it's brilliant for the growth of the game here. So
I think one thing,
congratulations, Praise.
I think one thing that would be absolutely fantastic, and Paul kind of touched on it a bit by mentioning the First Minister, but I think independence for Scotland would be absolutely fantastic just for what would happen to the NFL UK and Ireland and nations of the Commonwealth that we've repatriated Twitter handle. They would have to completely and utterly rework that Twitter handle, possibly even unpatriate Ireland again, because it would just be mealy-mouthed and ridiculous.
That's what could tip the vote. I think you've nailed that there. That's an incredible piece of analysis.
Just to get rid of the NFL UK social media channel. Right. Okay. This obviously just a quick get together. We will try and get together again to do a bit more of a deep dive analysis of some of the picks, maybe a bit further down. But for now, anyone got anything else that they want to raise?
I want to raise the fact that this is the most exciting part of the NFL season for every single person who follows the NFL. Your draft has just been done. You've added players into your franchise. Camps are about to start imminently. Let's get excited. The season's coming. Everyone's got a chance to win. All 32 teams, even Aidan McConnell-led Oakland Raiders. Oh, Las Vegas Raiders. No, Los Angeles Raiders. No,
the Albanian Raiders. Yes. Yeah, Albanian Raiders. The Tirana Raiders. That's what it is.
Okay, right. Well, we'll blow the whistle there. That's the end of this episode. Thanks for taking the time to listen. Please share your thoughts as ever on social media. And if you want to, join our Patreon. There's lots of ongoing conversations with the community, and it's well worth taking part in.
And that's it for the NFL Scotland Stramash podcast. We didn't have Charles, we didn't have Jamie. They'll be back at some point. Gordon coming safely back to take charge of the country. Ian away to polish his sunglasses and Cameron off to check his broadband speed. From us all on the Stramash podcast. Bye for now.